Hey everyone, Matthew here with a quick note on this episode and an apology. This was my first in-person interview, as everyone is getting vaccinated and in-person stuff is coming back. As it was my first in-person interview and I've never really done audio before starting this podcast, there were some sound issues caused by a mistake I made. It was my fault. I'm sorry, and I have some plans for how to not let it happen again. In the interest of keeping this podcast educational and my love for full transparency, here's what I did. I hemmed and hawed over what to do for at least a week before the interview. For remote recordings, I use my laptop and a Samsung Q2U microphone plugged in. I record in my bedroom because it's the quietest and least echoey room in the house. I tried recording downstairs in my office once, but the person I was recording with said, "Man, that is just some incredible background noise there." So just for anybody else that's thinking about doing a podcast, definitely check all the rooms in your house. Look for ones with carpeting. Don't, you know, no exposed glass. That's super echoey. Exposed wood is very echoey, all that. I considered bringing the laptop and passing the microphone back and forth, but I read that creates a lot of handling noise, and I confirmed it through testing. It's very noisy. I considered getting an extra microphone to plug into the computer, but that was kind of a bulky set, especially considering the microphones I'm using need a stand of some sort. I knew I wanted to do more in-person interviews going forward, so my goal was something small and light that I could throw in a camera bag so I could bring my camera as well. So, what did I do? I bought a Zoom H1 recorder with a built-in microphone. And then, I second-guessed myself a couple days later and returned it and bought a Zoom H6 recorder on the way to the interview. So that was kind of the root mistake. Not which Zoom recorder, I think the H6 was the right choice. It'll allow me to keep up to 4 to 6 channels in the future for interviewing people. Keeping a separate channel certainly makes the editing easier. The Zoom choice was correct. It was the timing. I spent too much time looking up options and committed at the last minute. So what am I going to do before my next in-person interview? Well, the issue with background noise was because I was using the included capsule microphone. I set it pointing at us at the peak of an almost equilateral triangle. The issue was it picked up a little bit of background noise, but noise reduction took care of most of that. The problem was that every time we moved, every time we stepped on the floor, every time I shifted my legs, the sound of the jeans was incredibly loud. It was louder than us talking, and I have no idea how that's possible because, like I said, it was set off to the side as like a triangle. It wasn't any closer to my jeans than to my mouth, but it picked up the jeans really well. So I apologize for that. There looks like there's about 3 options for correcting it. I can do what I had originally thought of and purchase another Q2U or similar. It's bulky, but it's doable. I could do shotgun mics, which will stand outside the video frame because I'd like to start doing video for the in-person interviews. It's also bulky, but it's better for video because the microphone isn't visible, and I don't know if I would need 2 shotgun mics or 1. I'd have to test that out and see. Or the other option is lavalier mics that attach to the shirt. I think I'll be picking up a pair of lavs because that's probably the most cost-effective and fits my immediate need for small and light. And down the road, if I ever decide to do the video, I'll be looking for a larger kit with maybe 1 or 2 shotgun mics and probably have to add some lights too, because most of the places that you interview people aren't well lit. Now we're talking a bigger kit. But if you are big into audio and have some feedback, I would love to get a note and let me know what you think I should do, especially if you've done a podcast or 2 yourself, or for that video stuff that I am just kind of dipping my toe into now. I'd love to hear that. So, and with that apology out of the way, here is the show. Good day, everyone, and welcome back to the Not Safe for Work Photography podcast. Today, we're interviewing Poppy Seat Dancer. Poppy is an international ballet dancer and a nude art model. How's things today, Poppy?
Very good. Thank you for asking. My elbow is in a bit of pain since I fell flat smack on my elbow during a photo shoot today.
How'd that happen?
Walking down the streets of Georgetown, you know, I was carrying some fabrics in my jacket and some chocolate in my hand, and my laces were untied, so they got caught, and I fell smack onto my elbow. Mm. Yeah, the photographer was so sweet.
You're out with somebody.
During a shoot.
It's always worse. It's always worse when there's somebody there.
He was so helpful. Yeah, we got some ice, and we kept taking photos.
All right. Dancing seems to be a big part of your identity. Can you tell
us a little bit about why that's such a big part of your identity?
I feel like that's so much who I am. Since I was 8 years old, I have been dancing, and I wanted to become a ballet dancer. And it's when you're training, when you're a student, when you're young, if ballet is not an obsession to you, you're not gonna become a ballet dancer, at least not at the level that I wanted to be. Mm-hmm. So to have that kind of a competitive mindset, you have to be willing from an early age to know you want to do this as a professional, and to be willing to sacrifice everything, your family, your friends, money, because training is very expensive. Mm-hmm. So I was willing to do it all.
Yeah. I don't think ballet pays much, unfortunately, does it?
It depends. Some companies, they take very good care of their dancers, but a lot of them don't. So it depends what company you end up dancing. Yeah. It depends on your level, your connections, a lot of things.
Do you think your dancing background and identity has helped or hurt your modeling work?
Absolutely, it has helped. My biggest passions in life are modeling, mm-hmm. dancing, and photography. So being, oh my gosh, and traveling. So being able to travel and model for photographers and dance, it's like all of my passions combined into one perfectly packaged career.
I was describing this interview to my wife before we came over, and I was like, yeah, she's like living the dream life. Like, she went to like Bali and like Australia, and she's going to all these other places, and you're doing it.
Thank you.
A lot of models I've seen don't seem to have a modeling identity beyond, you know, I'm a pretty girl. Is this something that you recommend new models try to create more of an identity for themselves?
You know, it depends on what their goals are. If their goal is to earn money from their fan base, then I don't see why they shouldn't stick with the I'm a pretty girl. But if they want to work with artistic or fashion photographers who are top-notch and have a lot of character in their work, then their portfolio has to reflect the type of work they want to be doing. I think what I mean to say is they're not out there being sexy. They're using their bodies in incredible ways to create works of art.
I see. Yeah, as opposed to the Instagram model, where it's really about like how many people want to look at my cleavage and how many likes.
Like, I have been wondering sometimes, to what extent am I like wasting my time? Because if some Instagram models who are pretty girls, like how you defined them to be, are getting so many followers and can capitalize on a much bigger income. And here I am like working my booty off to work with my favorite photographers who are incredible people and incredible artists. It's like the amount of work I'm putting into that is so all, what, like, what's the word for it? It's like
all encompassing.
It's all encompassing. So it's like I'm working my booty off.
Yeah.
But if all I had to do is post selfies like that are super sexual, then I could be doing that. So
yeah, I don't think it, I mean, I do think that a lot of the really popular Instagram models do have some real skill in like self-promotion, because again, if it was just as easy as like posting nude selfies, then of course anybody could do it, and it's not, I don't know.
That's true. Yeah, you really have to have a vision for how to market yourself and how to promote.
Yeah.
Absolutely, it's not all fun and games.
All right, so let's talk about travel. You just flew into the US after spending some time in Europe. Where's your normal base? Where do you normally stay?
That's a good question. So my entire purpose of this career has been to kind of find where in the world I belong, like where do I fit in? And my whole life I never really felt this sense of belonging, so I've been searching for it. And I remember between the ages of 6 and 12 years old, my American dad, he adopted me and he brought me over to the US with my mom. He brought us over from Crimea, which used to be part of Russia, now it's Ukraine. Or wait, it used to be part of Ukraine, now it's Russia. And so I had a pretty normal childhood with him. But after he passed away, my mom was always afraid of how does she pay rent? Are we going to be homeless from one month to another? And she was always putting those worries onto me. So I never felt like I had a stable home. And I was always very isolated from the world because she wanted me to go to a few hours of school every day and then come home, practice the piano, or go to the conservatory or the music school, practice the piano, go to ballet class, and come home late at night. So, and where I grew up in Southeast DC, like, you can't really walk around there because...
Well, that's interesting. And now you grew up here.
Yeah. So... maybe it's been changing in the last few years, but there were no cafes, no restaurants. It wasn't really safe to walk around there, especially alone. So I was going straight home, and it was like that for quite a few years until I finished high school when I was 16, mm-hmm. and I went to college. And so this whole career for me has been like, where do I fit in? Where do I belong in the world? And my boyfriend right now, he's Danish. So he's Danish-American living in Denmark. So I would say the closest to a home base that I have is with him in Denmark. If you care about such things, my legal residency is still in Washington, D.C.
That's fair. How much time do you normally spend traveling?
All my time.
I guess that makes sense. If your home base is, yeah.
My home base is pretty much, aside from Denmark with my boyfriend, but what is a home base? Is a home base like where you return home after your tour is over, or where you spend the most amount of time, or is that where you pay tax, or is that where you feel at home? I think now since I'm traveling again, and hopefully will continue, I think I'm going to be plucking my boyfriend out of Denmark to come meet me in different parts of the world, so... My home base will kind of continue to be wherever it is that I am in the moment.
Yeah, from looking at your schedule, I think on your site you say you're going to be here in the U.S. until mid-June, then Mexico, Iceland, and Europe in the next year.
You do your research. Like, if every photographer could be like that.
And I saw on your Instagram there's posts from Singapore, Bali, and Australia, and I think I only went back a little bit. I didn't even go back that far, but... What's it like? What is the international traveling model life like? You can lie. You can talk about how, you know, just glitz and glamour and dance clubs everywhere.
I can lie?
I'm just kidding. If I make a bad joke, I'll cut it out and then nobody knows.
No, I think this is like what people want to hear. Like an authentic conversation where we make mistakes and we are ourselves. So what's it like? Two words that come to mind. It's like, it's not all encompassing. It's like stress. It's
stress and like stress and excitement just all the time.
Yeah, that's getting close. It's
ecstasy, joy,
an adrenaline rush. It's that's a constant fun. Adrenaline rush and constantly being on my tippy toes. And on alert. There's like the very few moments where I can like just relax and just sleep. Although this is actually the first time that I'm staying in a hotel and for an extended period of time. Normally I'm sleeping in photography studios and being hosted by my friends or by photographers, and I almost never, ever prioritize spending money on hotels. But on this tour, also because of COVID, I am doing things a little differently. So my expenses have gone up a lot.
Yeah.
And I know that's going to be one of your questions about budgeting.
Yeah, but because that's one of the things that I've always wondered about when I think about models going on tours is how they've... Because hotels are expensive. Like, if you go on a tour and you spend $200 a night on a hotel, $100 a night on a hotel, $200 a night on a hotel, like, how do you make money? But yeah, if you don't have to spend money on a hotel, I can see where that makes it a lot easier.
Yeah.
I think I saw on one of your Instagram posts where you posted that you were landing in Bali and you had no idea where you were staying. You were just...
Yeah, exactly. I am caught like one of the Balinese Ubers with two like strange gentlemen I've never met before, and they just like they had plans, so I just piggybacked on their plans and I stayed in whatever hotel they had booked. But I mean, it was like a $6 hotel, so it was really nice, and then I kind of made my plans from there. That was fun.
Yeah, you're prepared to prepared to take advantage of what life provides you. It provides. What's your favorite country, then?
You know, I think there's something really special about all countries and all cities. Like, if you think about it, it's not really where you are, it's the feelings that you have that make it special. So you could be like in the middle of nowhere in the suburbs, but if you are having a feeling like, or an emotion, like if you're in love, everything is gonna look magical, like no matter where you are. If we just take the place, I like the tropics. So I love Bali for the warm weather and the beautiful greenery. I spent 2 months on Sardinia, which is an island off the coast of Italy, this during COVID, and it was just crystal clear water, warm weather, so beautiful for shooting. There was a desert and there was the seaside and caves and cacti, all in one space. Yeah, if you want to look up Sardinia, it's beautiful. So I love places like that, but unfortunately, there are very few photographers who are going to be available to shoot on locations like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking on the photographer, so you, it sounds like you work with fairly high-end photographers mostly. Or do you work with all photographers?
If you are referring to like professionals, I work with both professionals and hobbyists, and some of my best photos have been with hobby photographers. And I just want to like go off on a tangent and say that most of the people who hire me are cisgender white men in their 50s and 60s. That's just the way things are.
Really?
Yeah, someone criticized me for like hinting at that recently, but I was just being honest. Like, most photographers who hire me are hobby photographers in their 50s and 60s, and they do really great work.
Do you have any idea of their profession?
That's a good question. Just off the top of my head, I would say a lot of people seem to be in IT. Yeah, I can see her laughing at that.
Yeah, this has come up in a couple other conversations, and I just find it so fascinating how many like engineers and generally technical people choose photography as kind of their creative outlet. And I get that part of it's because, you know, it's gear. Like, you know, IT people tend to really like cool electronics. I think that's part of it. But yeah, I just find it really interesting. I think I'm gonna ask everybody that. Like, one person said that they did not. They worked with mostly lawyers and like airline pilots and stuff. And I was like, oh, yeah, but complete. And part of that makes me wonder about people's like, what kind of photographers hire you? Like, I wonder if like as a ballet dancer and like the specific type of work you do, you get a different group of photographers that hire you as opposed to. I mean, obviously, like genre stuff is going to be different. People that hire fetish photographers are different than people that hire art nude. I get that, but.
That would be interesting to like write down the female photographers who hired me, and to kind of compare the statistics of maybe, like, who are the younger photographers who are maybe female who hired me in comparison to other models, if they're attracted to the ballet skills.
That's the first time I've heard anybody say that they're hired by a lot of female photographers. Like almost all the other models I've interviewed, they either didn't mention it at all or they mentioned it was mostly male photographers. So it's interesting. Yeah.
I mean, it's still very disproportionately a profession where a hobby where men do this more
and disproportionately. Women do the modeling side. Women do them, it's mostly women models and it's mostly men photographers.
I wonder with agencies if that's different. I mean, there are a lot of really great male models with agencies.
Mm-hmm.
Also in the ballet profession, a lot of dancers are female. So it's the male dancers who are going to get more scholarships and a few more opportunities to dance, arguably.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, especially if a specific dance calls for, you know, X number of male and Y number of female, you gotta fill it, I guess.
Although most classical ballets, they're staged with a core ballet that is made up of all women.
Hmm.
Or most women, so
yeah,
it's arguable.
I don't know. So how do you determine where you're going to go? Do you have like a process?
Based on how I feel. So I knew that I wanted to come to the States as soon as I felt like the time was right. And you guys, or we, have been doing a really good job at pushing the vaccine out there and getting it out there. And where I'm coming from, they've been a bit slower. So I decided now's a good time to come. And then I kind of, in the back of my head, I keep a tab on where I get the most requests and kind of use that to decide. And sometimes if there's a photographer I really want to work with, I will just take a trip there. Even if I have no other bookings, I will just invest into it and go for it.
That was my next question, was on how do you figure out, like, if you get a lot of requests, is that part of your website that you mentioned? Do you have like a place where people can make requests, or just, you know, when they send emails, you just kind of keep track of, you know, like 8 photographers in the US have asked when I'm coming to the US?
Yeah, if somebody requests a full day booking, it will stay with me.
A full day. yeah, I can see that.
That's a good way to start planning a tour, is if I know, like, there's a photographer in Indiana where I would otherwise not go who is wanting to shoot for a full day and cover the travel expenses or help me with them. And on top of that, if they follow up with me once or twice, so then I know they're serious, and when I come to the States, I can get in touch with them. Then that's initiative for me to plan a trip to Indiana, which I'm doing now. So
that's very specific, I see. Yeah, no, it's the same thing. Was actually whenever I put out a call for interviews on the Instagram, this last time I got, I think, 16 or 20 people interested.
Wow.
But I think there's only like 4 or 5 that I'm having like conversations with, because there's a lot of people. I imagine it's probably the same from photographers. Like, you get a lot of like first messages and then no follow-up. Just nothing.
Yeah, so when photographers send follow-ups, it's like, yes, I know he's interested.
Gotcha. So good tip for those photographers out there that are looking to work with models. But don't overdo it. Don't send like 8 messages. 1 follow-up message.
No, but that's cool too, because if you think about it, like, I have Instagram, 2 Instagram accounts, and Facebook and email, 2 email accounts, and Model Mayhem and Purple Quartz, and also my fan site. So that's a lot of messages are coming from a lot of different platforms. So if you want to send 8 follow-ups, I'm all right with it.
Be polite and respectful. I got it. All right. What kind of planning does it take to go international? I've only gone international a couple times. If you're staying for long periods of time and you're doing work there, is there any additional things you have to watch for?
I have been stopped at the Irish border, mm-hmm. and I have been stopped at the Swiss border, mm-hmm. and questioned. And at the Irish border, they inspected my luggage and they took my passport and they did the whole shebang. They even took my phone. They found all the commitments I had scheduled with each and every single photographer. Mm-hmm. They knew how much I was earning. Everything. And I made a huge mistake. I listened to other models and I let them influence me into lying about my intention for being in Ireland. And instead of being honest and saying, yeah, I'm there for work, I lied. And I was so nervous about it, like, I'm not good at lying, that my hands were shaking and I dropped my phone behind the counter. And the guy at the border patrol agent, customs person, he noticed, and he immediately got suspicious and started asking me questions and pulled me into the questioning room. And after all of that, they sat me down and they were like, you know, you lied to us, like, how can we trust you now? And I said, you have everything. You have everything in my, you have my life in your hands on my phone. And I was about to, like, ask them, like, you know, if you're gonna kick me out, just do it now, because I have two photographers waiting for me. They have no idea where I am. My phone is out of battery. Like, let me at least be courteous to them. And they came in the door and they were like, you can go. Hmm. And I said, well, what can I do next time? And they said, just tell the truth. So I think that's really the best thing to do. And I started reading into the law a lot. And I think for a lot of countries, like if you're American going to Canada, or you're an artist traveling around Europe, from what I have understood is that artists can work in many European countries, including Denmark, where I call my home base now, without a worker permit. So if you're an artist and you're staying for a short period of time and you don't have a contract with a company, you can go in and work.
It kind of makes sense, especially for artists, because I imagine they do a lot of traveling for, photographing mountains or cities or whatever. And I imagine that's real hard to track.
But that does not apply to the U.S. For the U.S., even artists need a visa. So the U.S. is very strict. But I would recommend for anyone to double check on what I'm saying, to make your own decisions and do your own research.
Gotcha. So how does art nude work differ between countries? Have you found that like photographers like really like certain styles in certain places?
Well, I have some observations about that. In Russia, it was very interesting because art nude is still very much a taboo. And if photographers get models who are willing to shoot art nude as much as I am, they can get a little, like, they're very, like, excited to do that, because it's still not every model is going to be willing to do that in Russia for the taboo around it. I noticed that in Britain, photographers are so polite with so much etiquette. It almost makes me feel uncomfortable, because when we're chatting and I start taking my clothes off and I'm making eye contact with them, suddenly they'll like turn around and they'll keep talking with me but with their back toward.
That is kind of a weird moment I've found. I spoke with a couple other models earlier who really, they have like a mental shift to do when they go from being clothed to being nude. So they prefer to have like a changing room, because they just have to make kind of a mental, like, I am a clothes person. Now I am a nude model. I think it's a mental shift for them. But it sounds like you're just like, I'm just a nude model, and they forced me to wear clothes today.
I guess I don't see taking clothes off as anything inappropriate or sexual. It's just second nature.
Is that related to your upbringing? Do you think that's related to ballet? Do you think that's related to...
Well, if you think about it, we learn that nudity is something sexual. And I don't see nudity as sexual. I see it as just everyone is nude under their clothes. And we learn that the act of taking clothes off is sexual.
Yeah, that's the boundary. That's when you take your clothes off, you're crossing the boundary. Well, you're taking your clothes off of somebody else in the room.
I hired a friend of mine to be my manager for a year and a half, and she was really helping me a lot while I was traveling, because it's so much work. She was just always supporting me emotionally and always there for me, and whenever I needed help I could turn to her. And we had a conversation about this, because in Russia, a lot of women, they dress up in ways that, for example, in Denmark, where women wear, they can wear dresses that are very modest, but they'll wear dresses with sneakers. It's not really common for a woman to wear high heels in Denmark. It's just not appropriate or part of the culture, especially for how equal women are considered to men. But in Russia, like going to the gym, women will be dressed in a much more provocative way, with like tight leggings, tight pants, like very showy, revealing clothes that are super provocative. And I feel like wearing clothes, being fully dressed, that can be more sexual and provocative than being nude. Nude, you're not teasing anyone, you're just being you. But it depends on the culture and the perspective.
Yeah. When you come from kind of the Protestant background the U.S. had, there's a lot of social taboos around that for sure.
Yep. Yeah, I've had angry people, like one in particular in Florida that stand out. I was wearing like a nude bralette and nude panties, I think, maybe a skirt. And just in the morning, like, he suddenly was like walking towards me really fast and like raising his voice and yelling at me, and he was saying like, "You can't be dressed like that," and I was like, "Or you can't be like that," and I was like, "How? I'm fully dressed." Like, and he just kept raising his voice at me and was threatening to call the police just because I had a nude bralette, and he found that it probably made him feel uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been approached by the authorities a few times, and it was always very intimidating. Whereas in Denmark, all of last summer, I was doing photo shoots outside, nude, and people were minding their own business, and some people were like really interested, and they would stop and look at me, maybe walk over and talk to Carrie, maybe like ask to take some behind the scenes photos themselves.
Yeah.
Very curious and respectful.
That's what something about Olive said. She shoots in the Netherlands, I think. She said that there was never a problem with shooting art nudes outside, but when she shot in Ireland, I think she got some trouble.
Oh.
A little bit of trouble around that, but yeah, very interesting.
Who was this?
Something about Olive.
Okay.
Since you shoot mostly art nude, you may not be able to answer this in a great way, but do you get more requests for certain genres in certain countries? Like, I'm sure you get requests that are not exactly what you want to shoot.
I do get requests for erotic.
Mm-hmm.
I think if that's a genre that I was openly willing to book, then I would get a fair number of requests for this style. But you know, I don't really pay attention for what genre I'm requested for, so long as it's up to art nude. I always come with some wardrobe, and I'm always willing to shoot nude. So I hardly ever pay attention to what is the genre. Unless a photographer says outright, you know, I only want to shoot clothed, then I'm going to be respectful of that.
Speaking, you mentioned wardrobe. How do you handle wardrobe? Mostly you shoot art nude, wardrobe's super easy. But the rest of your wardrobe when you're traveling, how much do you bring?
Well, right now I have half of a small luggage, and I brought only half because I knew I would stock up on more shopping and wardrobe along the way. And I always like to change things up. So I always bring the basics, red, black, nude and pink point shoes. A pair for studio work that can stay clean, and a pair for outside that I can ruin and get dirty. I always have like a nude leotard because that has a very beautiful implied kind of a look. And right now I am providing photographers a link to my wardrobe. So I take photos wearing the clothes that I have, and it's easy for them to see what are the clothes and how do they look on me. And then we can discuss.
Do you see the pay rate vary in different countries? Do you make more in certain countries than others?
Definitely, I think it's challenging to compare.
That's right.
Let me think about this for a moment. I mean, if you think about it, Europe is pretty big, made up of small countries. America is pretty big, made up of small states. So put together, like, I think Europe and the US are two main hubs for models to travel to. Whereas places like Russia, you're not going to get a single booking, or you're not going to get a single paid booking. Most likely, you're going to end up paying the photographer because the culture there is different. So in Europe, I charge a little bit less because the market there is different. And in America, my expenses, my travel expenses are just so much higher. That has to reflect a little bit in my rate. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, it's very personal. Yeah, I think some models have a different rate for every country that they go to in Europe. Mm. And that's too complicated.
I mean, even in the United States, like the type of rate you can get in New York and San Francisco and DC is completely different than if for some reason you went down to Alabama or Mississippi.
Yeah.
All right, how do you budget for traveling? Do you try to have just like a certain amount in the bank before you go, or do you do more complicated calculations? You just go.
I think you just go. Go and hope for the best. Yeah. It's always been like that for me. I think my very first model tour that I planned, I had just finished my training as a ballet dancer, and I decided to go to Georgia, Atlanta, Georgia, out of all places. So I tried to make sure I had barely enough money to afford to pay for the flight, and then I got a few bookings, and I was able to cover my travel expenses. And it was really fascinating to me because photographers took me to these beautiful spots. So I could shoot and do what I loved and sightsee and explore the area all at the same time. And for the first time in my life, I came home with a little bit of pocket money that I could use to buy more flights. So
that's a success. One thing that comes up in these interviews over and over again is model safety and boundaries. Are there different things you need to do to stay safe when working internationally?
Do you mean in terms of practical safety or in terms of boundaries in photo shoots?
All right, let's stick with photo shoots.
Boundaries in photo shoots. In terms of artistic boundaries, if it's a new photographer that I've never worked with, and this applies to any country, doesn't matter where. Like yesterday, I worked with a photographer I never worked before with, and I arrived to the shoot, and before we started shooting, I brought up some questions that are important to me, like how are the photos going to be used, and how long is it going to take to get the photos, and does he work with a model release, and can I read it? So anything that was on my mind, I just got it out there, because it's better to say it before we even start shooting, because then there's a moment where you can still leave, but once the photos are taken, there's no going back. So it's always good to get those questions out in the open, as uncomfortable as that may feel. It's better to talk about it.
Is it standard everywhere to do a model release?
You know, I am hardly ever asked for a model release.
Hmm. That's interesting.
Especially in Europe.
I mean, I see. I don't think photographers can do anything financial with the photographs if they don't have a signed release, at least in the US.
That's not entirely true.
Oh.
And also, the thing with model releases, you can have any model release you want, but if somebody breaks the model release, are you really going to go to court over a few hundred dollars on some photos?
Depends what they do with them, I think. I mean, I'm thinking of Cameron Diaz. She did a nude model shoot before she made it big in The Mask as an actress. Mm-hmm. And that photographer sold those pictures. And I think she sued him and took all the money back. But like, it's still always, those things can come back and bite you years later.
Yeah, same thing happened to Madonna, right? And she had
She did, yeah. They released like a whole book of them. Same thing happened to, what's the actress that was in Gone Girl? Because I read an article about that a couple years ago. A guy hired her and got her drunk and took a bunch of pictures of her. and sold like 3 or 4 books full of pictures of her. And she's a super famous model now. I mean, she does some nude work, so it's not like it was completely out of the blue, but yeah, that happens. I don't know.
You know, that is such a very personal kind of topic. My perspective on this is that my goal with art and modeling has always been to travel and have fun and work with photographers whom I really like and create some gorgeous photos. So I've always run on a very much trust kind of basis. So for me, like getting model releases involved into the shoot where I just want to trust the photographer and have fun, like it's like one extra step. So, but this year I did end up having a very bad experience with a photographer who, it was not a good experience. And after that, I did go to a lawyer and draft a model release. So I do have a model release in case I ever need it, in case a photographer says, you know, I need you to sign a release. I will read it. I will always read anything before I sign it. And then we will talk about it.
It's interesting that you bring your own. That's something that Melancholic had mentioned in the past, where she wished that she could write her own model release and have rights to her own photos, kind of the way that photographers have rights to the photos. So, yeah. All right, we are running out of time here, so let's finish this up with a couple questions and we'll do the close out. Who do you look up to in modeling?
When you say that, do you mean like other models or photographers?
Model's choice, whichever you prefer.
Well, I realized that early on that if I could be another person, if I could be myself in a different body, like as a child, if I could be me right now, mm-hmm. how I am now, and also myself like as a 10-year-old, and if that 10-year-old looked up to me and the woman who I became, then I will have achieved my goals. So I have friends and colleagues whom I'm constantly in contact with, and we definitely contribute to each other's success. But I can't say that right now I have any idols whom I look up to.
That's an interesting perspective, though, in terms of trying to make yourself the best person you can be, or trying to make yourself somebody that you would look up to.
Exactly.
Foreseeing like that self-improvement and reflection.
But I definitely have photographers I want to work with, models I want to collaborate with.
What's your favorite photo in your portfolio? That's a better question for if we're on the computer and we can look at the portfolio, isn't it?
You know, I think I love them all so much.
All right. Poppy, where can everyone find you online?
On my website.
Which is?
PoppySeedDancer.com.
All right. Do you have any projects ongoing right now that you'd like to mention?
Yes. Eric McCollum published a book of 6 months of our photo shoots together. And the way that we first started working together was that we met very early on in my modeling career. And back then, I was shooting only clothed ballet photos. And he said to me, you know, my biggest passion, after we had our first clothes shoot, he told me, my biggest passion is shooting art nude photos. And if you're willing to try this with me, I will book the studio and I will send you all the photos so you can choose your favorites. And if you choose enough favorites that I can use for publication and for prints, then I will also pay you your rate. And I accepted his offer because I was very curious and very much wanting to shoot nude. And he got enough photos and I selected the best ones and I was paid on top of that. So he...
Sounds like a win-win-win.
Yeah, I mean, it was a very generous offer. Like, he was willing to give me this opportunity to shoot nude, and if I didn't like it, to discard the photos. So it was very respectful. And we've had a fantastic ongoing collaboration ever since. So the 6 months of photo shoots that he and I did together with two other dancers he put into a beautiful artistic book, and it's also on my website.
Nice. Do you want to mention, I assume your travel dates are also on the website?
Yeah, my travel dates are on my website.
All right, and the other big thing you've been doing lately, you just mentioned a minute ago, the remote shooting. If somebody wanted to shoot remotely with you, how would they do that?
Well, just reach out to me and tell me the concept that you're interested in. And the next time I will be shooting remotely will be in July. Mm-hmm. And it's a lot of gear to travel with. And I also work with an assistant. When I was stranded in Sweden this past year, my boyfriend, who has been working remotely for several years, he found a way for photographers to be able to control his professional camera gear remotely. And it has been wonderful. We've done over 150 remote shoots together in the most beautiful locations. So it's a huge passion for me. It's a completely different, new way of creating art. It's not for everyone. And it has a lot of advantages, like no travel costs for a photographer.
Yeah, because if the photographer and you go, then they've got to pay for them to fly, they've got to pay for your costs to bring you there. But this way, you're just doing your travel thing, and whenever you're somewhere interesting, then you just kind of piggyback off that.
Mm-hmm. A lot of the artwork on the photographer's side goes into the editing of the photos. Mm. And some photographers are really, really good at communicating with us during the shoot. Like, they will know exactly what camera angle they want, or they will be willing to experiment with the lights and really take the time to compose the image. Mm-hmm. Not everyone does that. So it's arguable how much is it their photo. If they communicate with us less and let us take more of the artistic lead, but it's still their photos and how they edit it, how they process it, which ones they choose to use, what poses they want to see.
All right, and with that, we are done. If you have a favorite model or photographer you'd like us to interview, please let me know. Check us out at the NSFWPhotographyPodcast.com, on Twitter as @NSFWPhotography, Instagram @TheNSFWPhotographyPodcast, and subscribe at your favorite podcast app. Talk to you all in a couple weeks.